Hello and welcome, Aaron and Philip.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm so glad that we have this opportunity to chat. Philip, were you a Mark Twain fan before you got this assignment? You seem so comfortable with the hallmarks of Twain's writings, his humor, satire, and irony.
I kind of wish I could say that I was, but I think my experience with Mark Twain was very similar to most Americans' experience with Twain, which is that I read Huckleberry Finn when I was 14 years old.
Okay.
And if I'm going to be completely honest, I probably read the first 50 pages and then read the cliff notes so I could write the essay. And so I had a lot of catching up to do getting to know Twain, not just reading, you know, through all of his works of fiction and nonfiction, but also getting to know Twain as a person, getting to know his biography, getting to know his family life. All of those things became important as we were working on this story.
How did the idea to build a story around a story evolve?
Well, we had sort of a problem, which was that we were writing this book with Mark Twain, but we couldn't consult Mark Twain.
Mm-hmm.
And there were even times when we felt that the story needed to be going in a different direction, but we couldn't necessarily ask Twain if he was okay with that. And so these sorts of conversations were happening between Aaron and I, but also the two of us and really the ghost of Mark Twain in the studio. And so we thought, rather than eliminating Twain's voice in those conversations, why not give him a voice within the actual book so he could make his argument for the direction that the story ought to be going, and we could make our argument for the direction that the story ought to be going, and everybody's storytelling instincts would be honored, hopefully.
When I first heard the title, The Purloining of Prince Oleomargarine, I thought the name of the prince was odd and far from exciting. Do either of you have a take on why Twain would select that name, or perhaps did one of his daughters, Susie or Clara, select it?
So we don't have a definitive answer, but we do have an idea for where the name Oleomargarine came from.
Mm-hmm.
Storytelling sessions between Twain and his daughters always began by the daughters coming into the room, mm-hmm. opening up a magazine and pointing to an image.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, they pointed to an image of a boy, and that boy became Johnny, who is the main character of this story.
Oh, I see.
I happen to think that beside that image was probably an advertisement
mm-hmm.
for Oleomargarine, and it's a very unusual word, and one that is, although it's unusual, also difficult to forget. And so I think Twain would probably have recognized the value of an unusual word as a storyteller. So that's where I think the word came from.
Okay. How did you begin to lay out the visual storyboard in your mind? And did you start before or after Philip had the story completed? Or did your collaboration begin from day one?
Our collaboration starts... It's hard to say because we're married, we spend all day together. but with this book in particular, Philip wrote the first draft of the manuscript and then put it away for a few months. And
okay.
I didn't read it. And I think I tend to be the first person who reads Phil's writing.
Okay.
And that was true with this manuscript too. But I didn't start really getting my hands on it and start manipulating the text until the script was really finished,
okay.
and that took about a year.
Johnny's grandfather, who drinks and curses and cares not at all for Johnny's welfare, has some characteristics for me of Huck's father in Huckleberry Finn. He is in the story for just a short time in the beginning, but certainly leaves our hero with a determination to live by a moral compass. Why, Aaron, did you decide not to show the grandfather's face in any of the five illustrations where he appears?
I did that with not only Johnny's grandfather, but also there's a magical woman who helps Johnny out.
Okay, yes.
And I did that for two reasons. One is a little bit selfish. I remember being a kid and seeing an illustrated book and reading what a character was like, specifically one that was either a little magical or very evil.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking, wait, seeing the illustration on the next page and thinking, wait, that's not what I thought at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so for these characters that were a guidepost but also a little mythical in Johnny's life, I decided to be a little more abstract and give the reader
a
more
chance.
Of a license
mm-hmm.
to illustrate their own character.
Very good. During the writing and illustrating of this really exceptional book, is there anything either of you learned about Mark Twain that you did not know before or about your own creative process?
We really enjoyed researching Twain's family life, and that was really even more important to us than even reading through Mark Twain's catalog, getting to know how he lived with his family, his relationship with his wife. His wife was his first and most important editor, so his wife is actually the queen in this book.
Oh, I see. Wonderful.
But also reading the biography of Mark Twain written by his 12-year-old daughter, Susie, mm-hmm. was incredibly important. And Susie, mm-hmm. She loved her father very much. She thought he was incredibly smart and incredibly funny, but she also thought that he was unwilling in most of his writing to be vulnerable, to be sentimental, and to show what she saw as his kind, sympathetic nature. Mm-hmm. And when we read that, we realized, well, that's really what we can bring to the story, because all of those things that Susie was asking for are the things that we believe need to be present in all children's literature.
Okay.
And so I think that was the most important thing that we learned about Twain, is that he had these elements within himself, but he was maybe just a little bit afraid to let them out.
Thank you, Philip Stead and Aaron Stead. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.